This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehias Wuhib in Washington. Here is what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
The TPLF, however, claims the AU is biased in favour of the federal government and will not come to the negotiating table without mediation by the Kenyan government.
That's Henry Wilkins reporting on new fighting in Ethiopia's Tigray region. Details coming up also. Four Catholic nuns who were kidnapped last Sunday in Nigeria have been freed. These stories and more ahead on Africa News Tonight. But first, our top story. The polls have closed in Angola. A new generation of Angolans, many disillusioned with their country's political system and corruption, voted for the first time today, posing a challenge to a governing party that has traditionally presented its continued dominance as a stable alternative to the country's bloody past. The poll stations were opened all morning. It's a tight race between the incumbent president, João Lourenço of the People's Movement for the Liberation of Angola, MPLA, and opposition candidate, Adalberto Costa Jr. of the National Union for the Liberation of Angola, UNITA. There's also our 220 parliament seats for grabs. The MPLA has led the country since independence from Portugal in 1975, but some political commentators say its support has dropped over the past several years. They say the opposition UNITA has attracted many young voters as economic challenges take center stage in the country's campaign season. For the latest, I'm joined by my colleague, Mayra Fernandez, with the VOA Portuguese service, who is in Luanda and has been watching this election unfold. Mayra, welcome to Africa News Tonight.
Thank you. Good evening, all the listeners.
Yes, a very hectic day for you, Mayra. So what is the latest from Angola?
Well, I'm actually at the press conference now in Luanda, the press conference of the National Electoral Commission for explaining what's happening now. The polls are closed. The counting has started. Journalists can ask questions at this moment, and the journalists that got the chance to ask questions was focused on irregularities that throughout the day civil society members and opposition parties have been highlighting throughout the day. But the biggest question is, when are the results going to be released? And that's an explanation that the National Electoral Commission has been giving all of us, is that it should take about 2 weeks. That's the law. They don't know when exactly we'll know all the votes, that all the votes are going to be count. But they will say that the vote count depends on how fast the reports from the polling stations will get to the headquarters here in Luanda. So it's one interesting thing that is happening with this election is that every 18 provinces have to send these reports to Luanda, to the headquarters, and then here in Luanda, they'll release, they will make that information available for everyone. So that feels like a bit of a delay for who's waiting, who voted today, won't get any results today because of that, because it takes a little bit of time. This year, Angola had the diaspora voting for the first time, and three countries had already sent their reports. It was South Africa, Zambia, and the Republic of Congo.
Myra, the potential for electoral violence is always there when there is an election. How was the security situation handled overall?
As far as we know, when that question was also put during the press conference, there were no incidents of violence so far, or no major incidents. But we could see a lot of authorities, a lot of police and other military forces close by every polling station. So, and there was another thing, that's an element, actually, an aspect that the civil society members were complaining about, because they feel that heavy policemen close by the polling station can be something of intimidating. But we had no issues so far, and yes, the city has a lot of military and police officials, authorities controlling the situation.
And Myra, did you observe any international observers today monitoring the election? Yes,
very close to the process. CPLP, that is the community of Portuguese countries that speak Portuguese, they've been actually asking questions during the process. We were there, we saw them checking if the process, all the steps were being followed. Also, African Union were here, the SADC, SADC, they are also here, European Union. There was a lot of international observers. We had the chance to talk with a former president of Mozambique, who joined also the mission of electoral observation. And Mr. Joaquim Chissano actually compared the election here with the election in Kenya. And he said two things that I found interesting. One was that we expect that the election here, the results, don't have the same thing that is happening now in Kenya. He hopes that it doesn't happen here in Angola. And on the other hand, he complimented Kenya's system and found Angola's method of voting a bit obsolete since everything is done by hand. There's no digital, no biometric data, nothing like that. And he found that a very interesting aspect that he believes that makes the counting and all the process a bit more slow than it should.
And finally, Myra, did João Lourenço from the MPLA or Adalberto Costa Jr. of UNITA, did they make any appearance today? Were they seen? Did they vote?
They voted early in the morning. Mr. João Lourenço voted in the city, in downtown. He arrived at 8 a.m., and it was a five-minute event. When he left the polling station, he talked to the press, and also a very, very quick declaration that he called on voters to go vote. He said that people should vote because that way Angola would win. That would be a good thing for Angola. And he seemed very happy with that moment. Mr. Adalberto Costa Jr. Voted very far from the city. It was in the province of Luanda, but in the outskirts. And it was around 8 a.m. also. He took a chance to denounce that the electoral books were not available during the voting process. which is a great assessment, something that has been UNITA has been talking about a lot. And he said that even though he had to vote so far away, he was very happy because he was voting among his people. He had a chance to take selfies with his supporters. The polling station where he voted was flocked with people. And he also called on voters to leave their houses, vote, and enjoy this moment, almost this a special moment where everyone is kind of feeling that it's different for so many reasons that we've been talking throughout this week about the election in Angola.
Mayra Fernandes from VOA's Portuguese service in monitoring Angola's election from Luanda. Thank you for your input.
Thank you.
So, as we just heard, voters were at the polls today to decide who will lead the country, the party that has been in power for nearly five decades, or an opposition challenger. For the first time, Angolans in the diaspora, especially Europe, voted. VOA's Douglas Mpuga reached one such voter, Edmilson Angelo, who voted in London.
Right. Feels good, obviously, to be part of the process of election. Obviously, this is the first time that this is happening. And it indeed something that is remarkable, even though this is only going to be happening in 12 countries. But for us, as people in the diaspora, being able to participate directly in the process of election of our representatives, it is indeed a very good milestone for a process of democracy. And the whole process was smoothly, and it feels really good to be part of the whole process from afar.
How was the process itself? How was it well organized? Were you many people voting today where you were?
Yes, so basically the process was very, very, very organized. It took me about, 5 to 10 minutes, so it wasn't really a big line. I guess by the time I went, obviously many people perhaps went a little bit earlier. But overall, there was a lot of people, young people broadcasting live, trying to pass, the whole experience of how things happened here in the UK to people back home. So this is, again, something that touches on the impact of the social, the digital space within Angolan politics from now on. But it was very, very smooth. It was about 5 to 10 minutes. The police, ambulance, so very well organized indeed, I must say, and it's something that is running very smoothly. So no issues at all from my experience.
In some other countries, maybe Angolans didn't have that chance, like in the United States, because they didn't register. Do you think the government in the future should encourage registration in other parts of the world where there are Angolans?
Right, 100%. I feel like, many people are actually, that are voting in the diaspora because the votes are going to have to be sent back home to be counted. People, are questioning the transparency of the whole process. But the reality of the matter is that just us being part of this whole, process of election, we are also maximizing the voices back home. And we're also putting, shedding light into the whole process of democracy of our country. And obviously, as you mentioned, there's only 12 countries that were part of the whole process of voting in the diaspora, and obviously those are the countries where we have a big representation of Angola diaspora abroad. But the reality of the matter is that now that this door has been opened, we're definitely going to see more encouragement for the government or from the government to reach more countries where there's Angolans, because I feel like there's many countries who are watching from afar and they would also want to participate. So there has to be a huge encouragement from the government, whether it's going to be a new government, whether it's going to be a continuation of the current government. There has to be this emphasis on the inclusion of the diaspora, not just in terms of voting, but also in terms of representation within the parliament.
Tigrayan forces say Ethiopia's federal allies have launched an offensive against their southern positions in violation of a months-long ceasefire, but Ethiopia's government blamed Tigrayan rebels for the flare-up in violence. Officials told VOA Tuesday they are ready for peace talks mediated by the African Union. Henry Wilkins has more from Gambella, Ethiopia.
The Tigrayan People's Liberation Front, known as the TPLF, said Wednesday that troops from the National Defense Force and Amhara Regional Forces attacked its positions near Kobo in the Amhara region of Ethiopia. The report was later confirmed by the Reuters news agency. A statement from the TPLF command said Tigray's army is reliably ready to repulse this offensive and transition into a counter-offensive to liberate occupied sovereign Tigrayan territory and return our displaced people to their homes. The statement appeared to suggest the TPLF could respond with force. The Ethiopian government has since alleged that it was the TPLF which launched the attacks. A statement from the federal government called on the international community for support. The international community should also condemn the obvious belligerence of the TPLF, lest it become complicit in the unconscionable march of the TPLF to a third round of conflict. All those who profess to be committed to the stability of the region and humanitarian ideals should exert pressure on the TPLF to renounce violence and endorse peace, the statement said. The Ethiopian government says it has been laying the groundwork for peace talks with the TPLF mediated by the African Union. On Tuesday, an Ethiopian government spokesperson, Selamowit Kasa, spoke to VOA.
The federal government has full confidence on the African Union and its high commission assigned to accommodate the peace talks. There is no plausible reason for Ethiopia to look for other entities to broker the peace efforts.
The TPLF, however, claims the AU is biased in favour of the federal government and will not come to the negotiating table without mediation by the Kenyan government and a resumption of basic services to the region, such as banking and humanitarian access, which have been blocked by officials in Addis Ababa. Getachew Reda, a TPLF spokesperson, criticised the government for favouring AU mediation on Monday in an op-ed published on the website of the Africa Report, a monthly news magazine. Ahmed Soliman is with UK-based research group Chatham House.
It's been very evident that both sides have been recuperating and preparing themselves for a renewed bout of fighting at the same time as talking about peace. And as we see today, as happened at the beginning of the war in November 2020, both sides have blamed the other for instigating the conflict. I mean, really, this relapse into fighting in Tigray and northern Ethiopia should have been avoided at all costs.
William Davison is an analyst for the International Crisis Group, a research organisation based in Belgium. He says all sides to the conflict need to talk with each other.
So this is a clear indicator that delay in talks has fed into this very volatile truce. And we see events that could mean a resumption of conflict. And I think there's an evident and urgent need for the external actors here, the African Union, Kenya's government, the US, etc., to try and get the parties not just to pause these latest hostilities, but also to actually sit round the table for talks where they can discuss all of their disagreements rather than making them preconditions for talks.
A humanitarian truce that was established in March between the two sides now appears to be at an end. Renewed fighting is likely to have a major impact on the humanitarian situation in Tigray. Humanitarian organisations say parts of the region could already be in a state of famine. UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres said Wednesday he is shocked and saddened by the renewed fighting and that Ethiopians have suffered enough. Henry Wilkins for VOA News, Gambela, Ethiopia.
Somalia's president Hassan Sheikh Mohamud has declared a total war against Islamist militant group Al-Shabaab after it attacked a hotel in the capital Friday, killing at least 21 people and wounding more than 100. Mohamed Daisen reports from Mogadishu, Somalia.
In a televised speech Tuesday night, Somali President Hassan Sheikh Mohamud announced that his government will launch a total war against Al-Qaeda-affiliated Islamist militant group Al-Shabaab, days after the group staged a deadly hotel siege in the capital Mogadishu. Mahmoud said that it is time to come together to defeat the enemy and said the military's recent operations in parts of the country gained significant ground, including in central Galmudug State and southwest state. His remarks were made after he met with the country Security Council to discuss the latest attack on Hayat Hotel in the capital.
Dadka Soomaaliyeed oo walaaliyaal markaan xafiiska imiday waxaan ballan qaaday in shabaab.
He says he knows that the Somali people are tired of endless mourning. He said he knows that people lose their loved ones in every attack carried out by the terrorists. He urged people to be prepared for an all-out war against the ruthless terrorists who are hostile to the country's peace. He added that Al-Shabaab's only principle is killing, intimidation, humiliation, and carrying out atrocities against the civilians.
Wa ogahay inaad dhibaatada argagixisada idinku hayso.
He says when he assumed the office of the presidency, he promised that he will launch a fight against Al-Shabaab to end the scourge of terrorism. There has been tangible victories, especially in Galmudug, Southwest, and Hirshabelle, he said. This is Mahmoud's second term as Somalia's president. He also held the office from 2012 to 2017. When he took office in June, Al-Shabaab's leader Abu Ubaida released an audio message calling the president the worst of Somalia's politicians and said Al-Shabaab would fight the new government. The group frequently targets hotels and restaurants in Mogadishu, where the Somali officials and security officers are known together. It attacked the Hayat Hotel with suicide bombers and several gunmen. Security forces cleared the hotel after an operation that took 30 hours. Mohamed Daisane for VOA News, Mogadishu, Somalia.
Wednesday marks 6 months since Russia's invasion of Ukraine. It is also the anniversary of Ukraine's independence from Russia. Ruben Chama asked the UN Refugee Agency spokesperson for East, Horn of Africa and Great Lakes, Faith Kassina, how the war in Ukraine has affected African nations and refugees in the region.
The impact of the war on Ukraine is certainly having repercussions beyond Europe. Funding for forcibly displaced populations in Africa is decreasing, but at the same time, costs related to delivering assistance to these refugees are also increasing. We have also seen severe shortfalls and significant cuts in food assistance for refugees in countries like Ethiopia and Uganda. And this is only expected to get worse.
What are the new challenges that the UN Refugee Agency is facing as a result of the war in Ukraine?
The main reason why these cuts in food assistance for refugees are being experienced is essentially because of global funding challenges exacerbated by the crisis in Ukraine. In addition, and due to the increasing socioeconomic and political pressures in hosting countries, including in this region, forcibly displaced populations, and particularly refugees, may experience heightened protection risks, such as discrimination and even forced returns. Therefore, this is also a new challenge that UNHCR is facing, because on top of the day-to-day daily assistance that we are providing to refugees, we also have to put, or rather double down on the efforts to ensure that, you know, vulnerable people are protected from these very dangerous protection risks that they face.
What is your appeal to the international donor community?
Our appeal to the international community, the private sector as well, and other partners, is that this is not the time that we should all come together and provide the much-needed resources so that refugees and the communities that host them, even in this region, can come together to learn, to work, and to thrive. And this collective investment can help asylum countries in the region and beyond provide a safe haven until the restoration of peace in the countries of origin of these refugees will allow them to go back home. Ultimately, for the Ukraine situation, is obviously for the international community to come together and ensure that the conflict, you know, stops and people are able to go back to their homes and rebuild their lives.
Faith Kassina, the UN Refugee Agency spokesperson for East, Horn of Africa and Great Lakes region, she was speaking with journalist Ruben Chama in Nairobi. And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yeheyis Wuhib in Washington. On behalf of our producer, Mokbilia Baro, and our engineer, Cedric Franklin, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.